This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 271, Conference Royale. Hello again, everybody. This is Andy Piper here. I'm coming to you from a early summer evening here in London, England. And I'm very excited. We've got a great show for you today. With me are my two friends, both known as Michael, because that indeed is their name, each of their names. How are you, Mr. Michael Rowe?
I am well, Andy. Thank you very much. And, you know, that's usually how it works, is you're called by your name.
It's true.
It could be a
happy
nickname.
Friday.
Could be, you know,
which
a
would
a
also
friendly...
be your name, Michael.
Oh, well, I guess it might be. Oh, anyway, Michael and Andy, wonderful to be together again. And luckily, you're already in the evening time, Andy. So hopefully, you're enjoying your evening so far.
We're heading into the weekend. I've got plenty of board games ready to keep me company through another lockdown weekend, but it's going to be fun.
Oh, awesome. Any one in particular that you're like super excited about playing?
So we've got Ticket to Ride Rails and Sails. So if you're familiar with Ticket to Ride, which is a train-based game.
Mm-hmm. Yes, train simulator.
There is a London version of Ticket to Ride, which is represented by buses around the centre of London, which is pretty cool. It's quite a quick game. This one is Rails and Sails, so it's both a worldwide, so you're both connecting up railway lines and cities, but you're also building harbours and connecting up shipping lanes. But on the flip side of the map, which I found fascinating, is a Great Lakes version. So you're connecting up, it's the same
canals?
Concept. It's the same concept, but you're connecting up, you know, ferry lines across the Great Lakes between the US and Canada as well, which looks really cool. So there's that. There's also a game called London, which is all about rebuilding London after the Great Fire. So you're an architect trying to rebuild London, which looks exciting. There's Coup, which I've played before, but I've never owned before. There's Hive, which I haven't played before, but looks very cool.
How's that last one spelled?
H-I-V-E, Hive.
Oh, Hive. I thought you said hi.
No, sorry. Hive.
A totally different game.
It is an insect-based game, yes. There's some other ones. There's a Kickstarter which has arrived this week, which I think I backed sometime last year, called Life Siphon, which is about humans that have been driven underground by some disaster, and you can summon dragons and stuff. I'm not sure how that works if you're underground, but yeah, there's a lot of gaming that occur.
Very small dragons or very big underground spaces, one of the two.
Exactly.
Oh, well, this sounds like a fantastic weekend. I wish I were there with you, Andy.
Well, it would be good because some of the games are not just two-player games. So we need more players. But I think my Board Game Geek profile is now up to sort of 60-odd games that I own, which is both frightening and exciting. Board Game Geek, by the way, really cool website if you're into board gaming.
I was going to say, if only there was a quantified... number that you could apply to the number of board games per capita within a household.
Like the number of Lego bricks that individuals are alleged to own across the world.
Yeah, or number of computers that you have within number of people per household.
Oh my goodness. We're going to have...
Almost like a Hackett number.
almost. That actually was a hilarious thing this past week too, when that first came about. I'm a big fan of pCalc, been using it for a long time because it was one of the first calculators that I could find that had reverse Polish notation that was functioning and usable. And when I saw that it had updated, I was like, wait a minute, what's updated here? What's this Hackett number thing? And that's where I learned that the Hackett number is apparently the number of computers in a household. by a certain
per capita.
Per capita.
Within the household. That was hence the connection there.
Hence the connection to that particular one. Yeah. So Andy, you know, if you get a moment or three to drop us some of the links to those board games or maybe your Board Game Geek profile, we'll be happy to share those with our listening audience. And maybe this is maybe we're having a little bit of a good sharing thing here. This will be kind of fun for us to share some of those games that we're playing or hope to play. I've got several that I'm still hoping to play and haven't actually broken them out yet with the family to go do that.
One more comment before we actually properly get into the show. Apologies, it's still the intro to some extent. There's a game that I've had for maybe a month or two now. I think it came just before we all kind of got told to stay at home, which is called Civitas Nihilum, which is kind of like a sci-fi detective noir game, but it's a one-player board game.
Ooh, that would be cool.
It was a Kickstarter I backed. It has an immersive soundtrack that you can listen to while you're playing it. And I haven't played it yet. And I actually had a message on my Board Game Geek profile saying, would you be prepared to trade this? Because this individual didn't get in on the Kickstarter and really wanted it. And I just thought, I haven't played it yet. I want to play it first. Maybe
it could
afterwards.
Be super cool. But,
yeah, exactly.
I'll have to check that one out. That looks really exciting.
There you go. Michael's found it already. That's the one.
And I guess it's as a one game player, it's a solitaire sort of thing, I'm sure. So hopefully there's some good win conditions, right?
But by definition,
yeah,
one player would be kind of solitaire. very cool.
All right, so moving from one player things to massively multiplayer things, let's kind of throw the ball, so to speak, into some of the other spaces and places that we're talking about. So Matthew Ball, actually didn't mean to say throw the ball, but there you are, had shared an article about Fortnite, which is now setting up an island, not where you parachute in and try to do the battle royale, but to do a party royale, which is focused on building and dancing and other kinds of competitions and not as a shoot 'em up. And gosh, you know, reading through this, it kind of reminded me of what Second Life was about, you know, and how that might be set up too.
Wait, Second Life was about something? Well, that was a goal?
Why didn't I win? Kind of building things, right?
Well,
I
wonder how the concerts would be if, you know, every, 30 seconds, the island shrinks.
I went to some of my favorite ever concerts in Second Life, and I'm not even joking. I got to know individuals who were performing there personally, you know, through being on Second Life. So, yeah, that's a cool comment. Especially with the number of virtual concerts and other things going on at the moment as a result of the current situation.
Well, and now I'm forgetting that there was a large concert, very well publicized one. Yeah. U2 was it? Yeah. No.
U2 was one of them in Second Life.
In Fortnite?
No. Oh, in Fortnite.
Oh, yeah. No, the one in Fortnite most recently. Yeah, that was quite a big one recently, yes.
Yeah, I'll have to find
the Stones, was it?
No, it wasn't, but it was a large concert, and you know we've had some conceptual ideas about this sort
Travis
of thing.
Scott. Where
that sounds right, yes, where the concert and being invited to the venue and having the opportunity to experience it, you know, the notion of front row in a virtual world could be one where essentially everybody is front row. You don't need to buy the ticket that is of limited ability to get. You're basically just positioning your eyeballs in the front row. And you could have unlimited numbers of people in theory, provided the servers could handle it without melting down. So it's neat to see performers taking their music and putting them through an environment like this where you could be with other people and experience the concert in a virtual way, not just through a television set. So, yeah, thank you, Michael, for that billboard link with Travis Scott. Andy, what do you remember about those Second Light concerts that you went to? What was, like, the memorable
thing? I mean, relatively small. So, and the performers were, I think they were using Icecast or something, one of those kind of tools for doing a lot of their broadcast. Mm-hmm. I got to know somebody whose performer name was Mel Cheeky. She was in art in Wales. I bought a number of her albums on iTunes, I think, after that, and used to listen to them on the tube on my way to work. And it felt like, you know, they were a friend of mine because they'd been so connected to us. And she is a friend of mine, by the way, but subsequently many years later. But, you know, there was that level of connection. And, you know, in Second Life, you have the ability to, I mean, go and dance and hang out and ask questions and just chat to people. So, yeah, it was really fun. I'm sure that the graphics and stuff in Fortnite and other tools are... even the audio streaming is much better these days. They aren't things that I've encountered yet myself, but I was also thinking more as well about some of the outside of virtual world, some of the big online streaming music concerts they've done for charity, mm-hmm. for COVID and other things over the course of the last month and 6 weeks. The technology just levels up and enables us to connect and do interesting things.
Yeah, I need to go in and see what the latest Pink Floyd concert is that would have been released today, because they've been streaming old concerts edited together every Friday on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of our favorite bands is a band called Blue October, and they've been doing through Facebook. They've been doing regular kind of online concerts where they would normally have been on tour. Unfortunately for us, they're doing them at a time that isn't particularly conducive to us being online, but hopefully they'll move through the time zones over time. So let's
follow that thread just a little bit more. I'm curious because I'm doing some of these things too, where there's so much now that's being recorded, but there is the time based element of when it's happening, so that when it's first released. Michael, do you find yourself that if you miss something that's like, I'm releasing this, you know, at 9 o'clock at night, and if you miss it, do you find yourself wanting to go back and watch it again? Or does it lose a little bit of that benefit where, you know, it's just been released or it's live then? If you miss the live component of it, that you could go back and watch it again later, but you don't necessarily do that. Does that enter into your mind?
My intention most of the time is to go back. Mm-hmm. But there's so much going on that is a good intention.
Yeah.
Andy, is that similar for you? Because I'm having the same reaction.
And not only that, I'm looking ahead to next week or the week after with some tech conferences that are moving online that I'm getting an opportunity to go to, because I probably wouldn't be traveling to those geos. But the actual schedule for them is, you know, happening after 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon my time. So, you know, some of the bigger hitter speakers aren't happening until nearer to midnight. So those are things that I would, you know, then like to go back and watch. But as Michael says, you know, there's so much content.
Right.
Will I ever get to it? I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because we're doing our big conference next week. And, you know, obviously normally I would actually be at the conference. And so you block the time, you go to the sessions. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, everybody, it's online, but you should really go to it. But all your day job stuff is still going on. So the likelihood of me actually attending even a third of the things I'd like to is, I honestly say, non-existent. So it's like, okay, so I'll go after the fact and do it. And the likelihood of that is probably not. So in that way, the online aspect makes it less likely that I will attend.
You know, I find this super interesting because we, all three of us, have grown up in a world where being there for the live aspect was pretty important, you know. So for something like a television show that always came on every week at a particular defined hour, and then it was the subject of conversation the following day, was kind of, you know, an important thing. And I'm wondering, just if since we're all gentlemen of a certain maturity, you know, if that's the common theme here versus others are like, no, of course I would go back and watch whatever it was, and not that it was live at the time. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to interact with other people who are engaged with the content and material, what's going on at the same time that we're consuming it together.
So that's one of the things that's been happening, certainly in the UK, is that it started really with the Doctor Who community, where they started to announce, you know, we're going to do this simultaneous rewatch of this particular episode at this particular time. And then the editor of one of the magazines managed to get some of the producers, directors, stars to come on Twitter. And we would have like we've been having over the course of the last sort of 4 weeks, these sort of hashtag timed watch parties, where, you know, people have been giving away a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff. I haven't been able to join every one, but that's been okay because I can then go back and flip through the hashtag and see what, you know, people were talking about, and I can remember those moments in the show. I haven't had live TV in my house for quite a long time. We've just not had that capability. So we've been using, you know, internet feeds, BBC iPlayer and other things for quite a long time now. Although, yes, you can get some live stuff through iPlayer. And it hasn't really bothered me, but it has been an adjustment from when I grew up, where, you know, we had these 3-4 channels that were the only things you could see at a defined point in time. Obviously, things have changed significantly in the course of the last 20 years.
Well, sure, but like the Doctor Who Christmas, you know, event, that was an event, right? And everyone mm-hmm. settled in to watch it and see it and experience it, and then you would talk about it after the fact. So these watch parties are a chance to recreate a specific time where multiple people are together alone or, you know, mostly alone, right? Depends on who you're quarantined with, and being able to have that collective experience at the right. So I'm finding myself doing some of these same sort of things. And I think if we kind of convey that back into the conference setting, yes, watching a replay of a keynote or watching, you know, something that is a hands-on session is enhanced, at least for me, to be able to communicate with others. And shoot, you know, this brings me right back to the way of being in the audience and having the Twitter board up on the right-hand side of the screen where, with a hashtag for the conference, and you're able to really interact with other people in the audience, everything happening at the same time. So I don't know. I wanted to see if you guys had a similar kind of experience as it relates to conferences like this. Maybe touching very briefly, since we were talking about Second Life a moment or two ago, there was a tweet from our friend of the show here, Ian, who's probably out walking his path in his garden right now, had updated his Second Life avatar, and we were commenting how it looks pretty darn sharp compared to what it looked like in the day.
Well, not only that, he's got it animating now too, which is awesome.
Yeah, I did not see the animation aspect of it, so that's probably because I didn't click all the way through, but there you have it. So that'll be neat.
Yeah.
I said before we came on, I said to Michael, what is this SI thing that Ian's tweeted about? And then they said, no, I think that's going to be SL. And it's demonstrating just how long it's been since I've gone and had a poke and proper play. It looks really cool. I'm very excited.
Now, Ian would probably also appreciate this, given how much time he is spending. Well, maybe not spending that much time, but that he's an aficionado of Animal Crossing, as a number of people are around the world. And this particular PC Magazine article that we found here deals with using Animal Crossing as a conference venue. So join us in Animal Crossing for Conference Royale on this particular island and buy your turnips from this store. So there you are. It would be interesting to see how others might use a virtual world like this, potentially alongside it. Well, actually, it's not physical anyway, right? Because all conferences that are virtual by their nature. But they could be augmented with a sidecar space where you could be together consuming the content and then being able to exchange and communicate about what's happening in a virtual world like Animal Crossing.
The interesting thing to me for this article specifically is that, you wonder if they're going to change the scale for Animal Crossing, right? Because they're limited to 8 players in a session.
Yeah.
So if you would go to a conference and every breakout session only had 8 people in it, unless it was a really small conference, you would be worried that all the sessions you're in are not either very good or not very well understood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do like, it's almost a mixed media example, for lack of a better term, right? Because they're doing a combination of Animal Crossing plus Zoom, plus I think a video Twitch stream for the PowerPoint presentations, and it's like, and when you actually read through, it started off as kind of a joke, and then they had to actually do it. So it's kind of like a joke that went bad. But the concepts are good, right? I mean, that's the whole thing.
The concept is great.
I love it. I'm such a big fan. And the people I work with, many of the people on my team, absolutely love Animal Crossing. So I'm kind of tempted just to do it as a small scale, like internal conference, just for fun.
We call those meetings.
I'm talking like a day-long summit of, presentations and stuff rather than just a half-hour team meeting. But, yeah.
Oh, a half-hour team meeting. That would be so good.
what I liked also about this article was, a big part of a conference is coming home with the swag, right?
Yes.
Every time, Michael, you would go to CES, be like, what'd you get? What's going on here? And here... you can create swag, digital goods that can be distributed for a fee or for free to publicize and, be unique. And I don't know. This is kind of fun the way I'm looking at it, too. And the whole notion about live streaming what is happening inside of a virtual world to get around the limitations or, just the fact that maybe somebody doesn't have the appropriate hardware or maybe there's limitations on users. There's lots of ways to go play with this.
Yep. And it's funny. It goes back to something we talked about some weeks back of the people getting around the censorship in China by putting graphic overlays, I believe, in certain game constructs.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. All right. So let's move out of the virtual for a moment and into the physical. And this particular article about some of the MIT folks at the AI lab, this computer science and artificial intelligence lab, have been doing some fun things with gesture control, Michael. And you found this article, so walk us through it. This looks pretty cool.
Yeah, so what they're really doing is looking at using sensors on the arm and the forearm, the upper arm and forearm, to give you better gesture control for maneuvering drones. And it actually... there's two attached videos, one where you go through in the graphic detail, the background behind it and, the value, et cetera. And one that's actually just demonstrating how they control this drone. And they're flying through a series of rings. I thought the type of gesture control was actually very interesting. It reminded me of some of the sci-fi movies, which seems to be where most people start when they're coming up with new and novel control systems, because mm-hmm. those have been tested out and visualized for people that they get it. And so if you imagine you're holding your arm at a 90 degree angle, you've got sensors on your bicep and on your forearm. And if you rotate your wrist to the left, you're actually doing a counterclockwise rotation of the drone. If you rotate it to the right, you're doing a clockwise rotation of the drone. If you push your wrist slightly, your forearm slightly forward, you're moving forward. If you stop the wrist, flatten your hand and lift it up, you're flying upwards in space, etc. And it actually makes it's a lot of work to control it this way when you look at it, but it also shows, like I said, a novel control method that could work in some environments. So I really like it. And there's the wrist gesture, Andy found that's been around for a while, so it's nice to see them use that. But it's not the physical armband and the sensors. It's actually the machine learning that they're doing, because it requires no training for the system to pick up your skills. That's where the uniqueness, I think, comes in.
This reminded me of two things. One, when Ian was on a TV show in the UK where they had a guest trying to, I think, navigate a drone through rings and burst balloons, and there was a whole health and safety issue which was discussed, which was quite entertaining in terms of like how the drone might be armed such that it could actually burst the balloons. I remember spending some time with Ian on that.
Small flamethrower.
Yeah, exactly. I had a coworker who had one of these Myo armbands, and it must be within about the last 6 years, because that would be the time frame that I would have worked with that individual. So I saw that as well. But so there's this combination. But as you say, bringing that together with some of the machine learning, some of the deep vision stuff that you can do in terms of understanding what's in front of you and moving things around more intuitively, I think that's really, really fascinating.
Yeah, and the cool thing to that point exactly is, while the hardware tech may be 6 years old or almost commodity nowadays, it's the AI and the machine learning part that takes those commodity pieces, puts them together in a novel way to provide a valuable service. And they also show in the more detailed video how they're using that to train robots, so manufacturing robots. And I know we talked a while back on a manufacturing robot that just, you did something and it mimicked it, right? And that's right. How you trained it. And so this probably looks like it gives more control than just a mimic. So I found it interesting. I think it's a really good example of, again, taking commodity hardware and adding machine learning to it to create a novel piece of software.
Well, so here's my next angle against this, and that would be haptic feedback. So not just the person controlling the robot through these motions, which could be detected by video or could be, other things, but providing the feedback back to the user to help the user get better at doing a better job with what they're controlling. Okay. That would be pretty clever.
Yeah, one really strong piece of haptic feedback is if they didn't have that net there and the robot just smacked into him. That would be pretty haptic.
Well, that'd be pretty funny. Yeah, smack you right in the face. But I think you could do more than that. And in doing so, that could help people recover from injury, get stronger, learn new skills. I mean, there's a whole range of things that could be done with that too. And Andy and I, we were talking the chat here in the background too about the Nintendo glove, the Power Glove.
The power glove.
So I just finished reading a book recently on kind of the history of virtual reality and augmented reality. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole section of one chapter on the power glove.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
And I'll find the name of the show, the book, and I'll drop it in our show notes.
Oh, that'll be great. So we're not leaving robots yet. The next one is from our fun friends at iRobot. And unfortunately, this is not good news. And that is the Terra lawnmower apparently is going to be delayed. And shoot, I kind of wonder if with everyone who is sheltering in place at home, there's just more time available for people to get their lawnmower out and mow their own lawn.
Well, I swear there must be, because half the time I'm on calls, one of my neighbors starts firing up a lawnmower. Or, early in the morning or late at night when you're trying to wind down, somebody within auditory distance decides, this is a really good time to really work on my yard. And we've talked about that specific robot for my robot, gosh, for years now, that it was always right around the corner, right? This is the auto mowing of your lawn with some intelligence, and it hasn't shipped yet, and it looks like it won't ship this year.
Did we ever talk about on the show the concept of precision watering a lawn?
No.
Well, I was here.
No. So one of the problems
is that, where you
that
hit each that blade I, of grass.
Well, it's where you would say, look, you know, if you didn't want to invest in an irrigation system, you know, rip up your lawn, put in pipes, you know, these things leak and break. The sprinkler heads don't do what they need to do too. So you don't want to do that because that makes your lawn look like a wreck. You do want to water your lawn to keep it healthy and, you know, doing what it needs to do. But in order to do that with just the sprinkler and hoses, you got to move them around a lot to be able to cover your lawn. Wouldn't it be cool to be able to deliver just the right amount of water to the right parts of your lawn and do that with a robotic thing too? So not just cutting it, right? But to deliver the water that it needs. And that would be an incredible thing. Of course, you have to move a hose, yeah, which means that you got a lot of battery power to move a hose around.
Right.
If that's what you need to do.
And I know in industrial farming, there are systems that do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that they use satellite imagery, they use mm-hmm. weather and temperature information, humidity information, soil sampling, and come back and say, you know, this part of the field needs X number of gallons per minute, this other part needs Y.
Right. You could sense it. You could
scaling that down to the average consumer lawn.
Yeah.
Be really interesting if you could do that, and then becomes the, what's the right price point?
Well, I think if we take iRobot's, you know, learning an example here, that would tend to give some people some inclination about a robotic lawnmower.
I thought that's
expensive.
What you have kids for. Just, hey, go well, do the I, sprinkler.
That's what my job was. Like someone who does not have kids right now. Because you gotta guide them. Let's just say you gotta guide
you
them.
You gotta bribe them. Is what you're saying. You gotta bribe them. You gotta pay them good money to move the sprinkler.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. all right. So I don't even know if I want to talk about this topic or
I
not.
I do.
You know. Yeah, okay.
This is the diabetes sampling spiders that go in your eyes?
Yeah. Those things.
So we've talked about multiple examples of enhanced contact lenses for AR and other things. And I saw this one come across this week, and I thought it was really interesting. So instead of adding capabilities for AR or something, this is actually a group of researchers in Korea that are creating a contact lens that has sensors in it to detect, monitor, and treat diabetes. Which I found fascinating because it's able to do real-time glucose levels in the tears of the eye.
Talk about measuring the tears, huh?
So,
well, not even that. I mean, that itself is amazing.
Yeah.
The next sentence, if the wearer is determined to need insulin, drugs encased inside the lenses can be released directly.
Yeah, that's cool too. That's called eye drops.
How do they get in there?
You take a big needle and you shove it in. Well, put it this way, that's much better than the needle, right? Think about it.
Well, it is, but no, seriously. I mean, let's just pretend for a moment that there is N number of doses of the drug in the contact lens, right?
Okay.
Like, they'd have to be disposable, wouldn't they?
Well, people already buy disposable contact lenses. There are lenses right now that are daily disposables.
Well, but they're not full of technology.
Yeah, but that says the infrastructure of the manufacturing process and the price for the lens itself has gotten down that low. So now you're adding in whatever the net incremental cost for the sensor and the distribution. I mean, I've seen people that have the monitor attached to their hip and they've got a Bluetooth adapter attached to their arm to do real-time monitoring.
Yeah. No, so, but they don't have necessarily micro doses of medicine that gets, well, they could.
They do on the hip monitor.
But how do you do that in a contact lens?
Well, evidently you shove it in your eye.
Oh.
But I mean, this is I think this is just fascinating and a really cool potential advance if they can get the cost down to, you know, if it's within 10 or 20% of what the hip stuff is. I think this is really cool innovation.
Well, it would be it'd be super cool because it's a little less invasive than maybe something that's attached to a hip. And at the same time, it could continuously monitor, right? If it's looking for the glucose levels in the tears, that's probably a pretty dang good way to know how a person and their biochemistry is behaving.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, you got it. That's the value prop here, and that's what the hip monitors do, right? I mean, they have real time sensing and dosing, but this is much less invasive. And anytime you like poke a hole through skin, you're going to have potential risk of health things. And here, it's like an eye drop.
So, this past weekend, we rewatched Kingsman, the first one, not the second one. And this kind of reminds me too of something that could be, you know, backwards into science fiction. So like if you were a spy and you didn't want to like crush your fake tooth to release the poison and prevent you from being tortured when captured, you could have these little contact lenses and you could just do the
same double blink
kind of thing. Yeah. You do a double blink really fast and that would take care of you. So.
Cause that would never accidentally happen.
You click your heels three times and say, I wish I were in Kansas.
I can just imagine M going to Bond. Now, put on these contact lenses, and if you're caught, double blink really fast. Otherwise, they can torture you, and you'll die. And he goes, you mean like this? No!
Here's something fun, too. I scrolled past this just a little bit more. If you scroll down on the same page... there is something that it's from January. So we've had this idea before, this Mojo Vision company about putting augmented reality screens on contact lenses.
And their sister company, Mojo Nixon.
Yes. Who loves banks, as I understand. Yes. And not Tyra. This is fun stuff. All right. Too many good fun things. And we're almost out of time. Yikes. So let's wrap our things up. We have a couple quick hitters that are pretty funny that came through our feeds this week. One of them was from Slate Magazine, and apparently, I guess we're on a Nintendo theme here still with the Power Glove. This isn't from the Power Glove. There was a 1994 game in Japan that was a baseball game, and what was it called?
A fighting baseball game.
Yeah, which it has got to be funny. I used to play, what was it called? Arch Rivals.
Yeah, the basketball
game.
Which was
a fighting basketball game.
Yes.
Exactly. You punch the guy in the face, take the ball, and go score.
Isn't that how baseball is played? I mean, I'm not a very big fan, but I think that's what I've seen. Or am I confusing it with ice hockey?
No, it's confusing with ice hockey.
Ice hockey, yeah.
So the funny part of this article was that apparently somebody had to make up fake American baseball player names, and lots of them, for this game that was in Japan. And people in Japan love baseball, too. So no surprise that there's a baseball game like this. And just reading through the list of some of these names was just a riot. And the idea that somebody was sitting there and creating them.
And Bobson Dugnuts hit it into the outer field.
There you go. See, you got the call right there. Rufus T. Barley Sheath from Liz Lemon and 30 Rock.
It was very well done.
It was good. It was really good. Anyway, that was kind of funny. I had one other funny thing to cover. Actually, it's not funny at all. It's and it wasn't me that's going to cover it because we touched on this before. But here you go. That as last week, I'm you know, ad-libbing here for the last moment or three. The last thing that we had on deck for today, on deck, there's your baseball reference. Michael, is a book by Daniel Suarez that I guess you've just recently finished reading.
No, I've just recently started reading. I like Daniel Suarez. We've talked about some of his books in the past, and we probably mentioned this one when it first came out, Change Agent. And I've just kicked it off, and like all of his stories, it starts off with known technology and then kind of projects it out into the future. And this one appears to be all about CRISPR and customizing your kid and what could possibly go wrong. So I just want to throw that in. Usually we say, what game are we playing? And we've had not had time to do that recently. So this is a book I'm reading. And if you've read it, don't give me any spoilers, but tell me what you think over on Twitter at games@work_biz.
That'll be fun. All right. Well, guys, another fun episode here today. It took some interesting twists and turns, and we'll look forward to joining up again for another one of these in a week's time. So enjoy, have a good week ahead, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.